Coming up on this episode of the Wampus Lair Podcast, Carl and Jason dive into their top five moments from Star Wars: A New Hope. We also go down a few tangent rabbit holes and take a poll on your favorite Star Wars movie. So sit back, relax, and watch out for Wampus.
Welcome to the Wampa's Lair podcast. Deep in the bowels of the frozen ice caverns of Hoth, our hosts, Carl LeClaire and Jason Hunt, have been frozen upside down to the cave ceiling with nothing to do but talk all things Star Wars. So make yourselves comfortable, but keep a wary eye out for trouble here in the Wampa's Lair.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. This is episode number 77, Chillin' in Tashi Station.
But I was going into Tashi Station to pick up some power converters.
I am, as always, one of your hosts, Jason Hunt, and with me we have the General Jand O'Donna to my Grand Moff Tarkin. I'm Tarkin for 2 weeks in a row. Whoa. We have Carl LeClaire.
General Jand O'Donna, he's one of my favorite generals because he's so curly white with that beard and everything. You know, I like how each movie has different generals that you never see again. Like, we have O'Donna in A New Hope, then we have Ryken, and then we have Madeen. Like, we never see any of those guys intermingle. And it's funny, because if you read the Expanded Universe books, they seem to hang out together all the time in some of those books. But in the movies, no. Ain't nobody got time for that.
No.
But, I like General Jand O'Donna. And this, you know, all this A New Hope analogy, this is episode 77. The movies began in 1977. Imagine what we should, you know, we should just, like, when we get to episode 1977, like, when we've gotten to almost 2,000 episodes, I think we need to actually act out the entire Star Wars A New Hope movie.
I would do that. Okay, I would definitely do that. Of course, we will be, like, 85 when that happens, but I'm down.
So. Oh, man. I plan to be dead by 85. That's my goal. So.
That's horrible.
I know it's horrible, but, you know.
I plan to live to 120.
What? Why?
Because I plan to, like, be that guy that's, like, doesn't stop until he dies.
Oh,
so,
man, I can't wait to stop. Retirement is my only goal right now. Just kidding.
And by, like, not stop, I mean, like, he's always doing something new and things like that, you know. Doesn't just sit on the couch and play his crossword puzzles, you know. Because that would be boring and stupid.
Well, yeah, I don't play crossword puzzles. I play Star Wars.
Well, exactly. Exactly. So, I plan to live to 120.
All right. Well, good.
A ripe, full life.
Well, when you're 120, I think I'll be dead. So, anyway, enough of that stuff. Episode 77. This is going to be all things Star Wars: A New Hope. We're going to be talking about our top five moments from Star Wars: A New Hope. As any of the classical fans would call it, just simply Star Wars. To them, it's not Episode 4 A New Hope, it's just Star Wars. But for young bucks like Jason and I, it will always be Episode 4 A New Hope.
Yes.
So.
We are young bucks.
We are young bucks. Hey, did you see that dough? Anywho, I'm going to be quiet. But actually, we had a very fun matchup for this episode. I was just saying to Jason before we started, we got 21 responses. This may, without, like, again, I don't know for sure because I didn't go back and check, but this may be close to the most we've ever gotten or close to it. And I was commenting to Jason, you know, this is so awesome, the amount of involvement you Larians are taking now. And I think it's great. Like, this isn't, like, the most, like, this is definitely not the coolest matchup we've ever had, but lately, we've just had so many awesome responses that, again, we just really encourage you guys to write in, you know, with whether you email, Facebook, or Twitter. We love getting these responses, and I think it makes it a lot more fun. And a lot of you guys that write in, like, I literally chuckle at some of the things you write. You guys are very clever, so I really enjoy it. So, but anyway, our matchup was, it was a bar brawl. We had the bar owner from episode 4 of New Hope were versus episode 2's diner man, Dexter Jetster. And it was a bit of a landslide, but Jason, will let you read those responses.
Yes, and there's quite a few of these that made me laugh. And I do believe this is the most responses we've ever had to a matchup. So kudos on you, Larians. Starting off on Facebook, Joe Mignano says, "My credits are on Dexter. I mean, just look at him. He looks like he could eat the other guy for breakfast." Brian V. Klein, "Dexter would mop the floor with Wooher, and then would probably mop the actual floor." Joey Letson, "Sad to say, this is no contest. At the very threat of danger, Wooher would hide behind the bar, as always. Dex would easily be able to grab him with three of his forearms. The fourth arm would be making sure his pants don't fall down. Dex would then either throw him out of the bar, or if he was really mad, dispatch him with that vibro knife that came with his Hasbro figure." And I do have that figure. It's a pretty good one. Christopher Sangnetta, "Dex, I mean, he charges in with a belly bump, double punch, and then gets the cleaver with the third arm. Fourth arm's just there to pull up his pants." Dwayne Smith, "The bartender from the toughest bar in the galaxy, or the cook from the friendly coffee shop? Wooher takes it." Jesse Collins, "Gotta go with Dex. Four arms are better than two. I don't speak from experience, though. Wooher died behind the bar at the first sight of a drawn blaster. Wooher is only good for serving drinks, whereas Dex helps with the cooking. I know who I'd rather have help from in the kitchen. Dex also gives awesome hugs." Colin Sugar says, "Dexter, one set of arms to hold Wooher, one set to beat him to a pulp with." Patrick Kotef, "I will go with Dexter. Have a nice weekend." Well, thank you, Patrick. I did. Brian Ramsdell says, "Dexter, Wooher would cower behind the bar yelling, 'No blasters. No blasters! No blasters!'" Zach Williams, "Dexter, I mean, he could hold Wooher with two hands and then use the other to beat the living crap out of Wooher." Paul Gann, "Dexter, if for no other reason, he has four arms." Jeffrey Beaumont, "Dexter, he lifts his arms and the smelly pits does the job." Matthew Marks, "Well, we've all seen what Wooher does when things get rough in the cantina. Jumps behind bar. No blasters, no blasters! And Dex has four arms and has the size advantage. Dex all the way." Roger Peroni, "Dexter, because like everyone else said, Wooher is a coward and Dexter has an awesome voice. These Kaminoans keep to themselves. They're cloners." Kenny Crayley Jr. says, "Dexter, because he's good and his voice is awesome." I would agree. Renee Tajima Bier says, "Dexter Jetster." Phil Johnson, "Dexter, Wooher will duck for cover." Anthony Markham, "Dexter, Balkan arms, he wouldn't run and hide." Philip Liebel, "Dexter, Wooher's threatened by droids. Dexter also has an arcane knowledge of weaponry, so you know he's probably proven himself in a few scraps." Indeed. We have two more, one on Twitter from @Skirata10. "Dex, four muscular arms and a weapons expert. He wins hands down." And finally, an email from our buddy Jazz. He says, "What do you mean, what would happen if Dexter Jetster and Wooher went at it? They already did. Why do you think Wooher looks like that? Dexter totally pasted him." And that brings our incredible landslide victory to a grand Larian total of 20-1. In favor of Dex. So could you please give me your idea on who would win this while I take a drink of water?
Oh, sure, Jason. Wooher wins this. I'm sorry, guys, but you're all wrong. Wooher would absolutely destroy Dexter Jetster.
I can't tell if you're serious or joking.
Obviously, I'm serious because Dexter Jetster's a joke. He owns a diner. He's just a little pretty boy who's like, "Oh, I have a family diner." Wooher runs the most, like, badass cantina in all of the galaxy. Yeah, he dove behind the bar because a guy drew out a blaster. What was he going to do, like, block it like Vader? I don't think so. You know, he's all about preserving his life. So, like, he's got really good diving skills. He would dive right at Dexter's legs, wrap him up. He's so top-heavy, he's going to go right down, and then he's done. I'm just kidding. Obviously, all of that was a joke. I want to give it to her because I really like him, and I actually read his Wikipedia page. It's actually very short for Wikipedia. I mean, it's a short page, so I actually read his, and he really isn't much of a scrapper. I mean, he took his job. He was like a mixologist. He really liked making like fancy drinks. According to Wikipedia, he was doing that to try to impress Jabba so he could like get rich and retire. So I don't know that he's necessarily much of a scrapper. Whereas Dexter, clearly, obviously, you just, you know, when he's sitting there talking with Obi-Wan, he's got like that anchor tattoo on his forearm, like he was some sort of Navy man or something. I'm fairly certain Dexter would certainly win, but I'm giving it to her just because this isn't fair.
All but, right.
What say you?
Well, fair aside, this is no question. I honestly, I'm a much bigger fan of Dexter to begin with, but that's besides the point in this matchup. Dexter, I think there's not really much of a question in this. And I'm not 100% certain on his entire backstory, but I do remember Dexter, before owning a diner, traveled the galaxy.
Selling narcotics, right?
Something like that. He was he wasn't exactly a above table businessman, you might say. But he's definitely trying to turn over a new leaf because he's friends with Obi-Wan Kenobi and owns a diner now. But all that former experience, in addition to the size difference, definitely, no question.
Yeah.
Dexter wins. So
I thought that would be such a fun matchup, and as soon as I said it, I'm like, this isn't going to be close.
We got some awesome hysterical responses.
We did. I liked Brian V. Klein's. He'd mop the floor with him and then literally mop the floor.
Yes.
That was clever.
Yes. But that gives us a grand total of 21-2 with Carl's sympathy vote. So
it's realistic, I tell you. But yeah, we have another pretty stellar matchup for the end of the episode that was given to us by Alarian, and I'm excited to introduce that one at the end. But you got to wait.
Yes. No secrets yet.
Not yet. And we also have another little some exciting info for you guys at the end of the episode. But you'll just have to wait and hear what that is.
Yeah. So stick through. All the way to the end.
Just stay with us.
I can't talk.
You can't do any good back there. Sorry.
All right. But what is our topic that we have to get through?
Today, you make it sound like it's a task.
Well, it's not. But I mean, to get to all the awesome stuff at the end.
Excellent. I see your point. We are going to be talking about our favorite moments from A New Hope today. Again, with episode 77, we thought, 1977. And Jason and I were thinking about, like, kind of like when we did episode 66, we did our Revenge of the Sith commentary, and we were just like, you know what? We're both so darn busy. We just don't have time to sit down and do an audio commentary. And also, I think you guys are probably a little less likely to listen if it's just a straight-through audio commentary if you're not watching the movie. So we will, at some point, we will definitely do audio commentaries on all of the films.
Yes.
But for right now, we just figured, let's just talk some of our favorite moments. Yeah. I don't remember what episode it was. I mean, it was a while ago. We did do like an analysis of A New Hope. That was a long time ago.
Yeah.
But
in a galaxy far, far away.
Yeah. See what you did there. That's from the beginning of James Bond. I like it. What if in episode 7 they begin it by Han Solo shooting the screen and then it shakes and gets all bloody? Yeah. That would be so great. And have you seen those t-shirts? You know how like J.J. Abrams works with that company, Bad Robot?
Yes.
Have you seen the Bad Droid pictures? So it's like it's the same picture as the Bad Robot. Instead of that like rectangular orange robot head, it's R2-D2's dome. So I'm hoping they use that at the beginning of episode 7.
That would be pretty awesome. I think I've seen that, but
although,
it's been a while.
This is totally a sidetrack point, and I apologize. But if episode 7 begins and we have like, you know, the 20th Century Fox and the Lucasfilm thing and then Disney, I'm going to be pissed.
I don't think we'll see the Disney.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, because they don't use it with Marvel. That's right.
Yeah,
so we'll be fine. I just don't want to see that like magical little rainbow going over before Star Wars. Like it just doesn't fit.
Yeah, no, we're not going to do that. But yeah, no, actually the interesting thing to think about though is with the last Thor movie, and this is continuing on this sidetrack, so before we get to the topic, so bear with us. Before the last Thor movie, the Marvel logo, when they played that, the composer for the Thor movie got to write music for a brand new Marvel theme to go along with the logo. And so I'm thinking we might actually get some sort of like Lucasfilm, official Lucasfilm theme done by John Williams for Episode 7. So to replace our beloved 20th Century Fox fanfare. So
that's right, yeah, because there's no more 20th Century Fox. Duh.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. So I'm thinking they might ask Williams to do that, which I think would be great.
Do you want to hear something really exciting?
Yeah.
About John Williams?
Sure.
So every few years he comes to Boston to conduct the Boston Pops.
Uh-huh.
After work today at church, this woman that works at the Boston Pops came up to me because she knows I'm a big Star Wars fan. Mm-hmm. And she said that she was going to try to get me a backstage pass so I can meet him next time he's in town. Yeah.
No way!
And she said if she can't get that through, she'll definitely get a poster signed for me.
Nice!
So, yeah, and she said that whenever he's – because she's met him twice, and she's a big Jaws fan. And when she says whenever he does autographs, he writes a couple bars of like the theme for that movie. So she's like, he'll probably write a couple bars from Star Wars as he signs it, like next to his signature, because I guess that's what he does when he signs people's stuff.
That's so cool.
Yeah, I'm trying not to get too excited because she's like, I can't guarantee I can get you to meet him, but she's like, I will definitely try. And I was like, that's amazing.
Well, when does he come through?
The next time I know he's coming through in the next few months. I feel like – I thought it was soon because she said that he'd be coming before this – I thought she said before the summer. This woman, like, she's very well connected.
Right.
So – but she knows I'm a huge Star Wars fan. She's like, I'd be happy to try to, you know, get you a pass so you could meet him. And I was like, that'd be awesome.
So,
but I don't know that I'm not holding out for that. I don't want to get my hopes up, but she's like, I can definitely get you an autograph. I mean, I'll be honest. I don't care about autographs, but I'm not going to say no to it.
Right.
So, but I'd much rather meet him because that way I can like take a picture with him.
John Williams.
I know. Be like, what were you thinking when you wrote Yoda's theme? Because it's perfect. And then I'm going to be like, this is my friend Jason. I'll show him a picture of you and be like, can you write a theme about us? And that can be our new intro song. Oh, we would be the only podcast with John Williams.
Except that's not going to happen.
I know. Sorry. Okay, let's talk about
we're
A New Hope.
To shell out like thousands of dollars.
I don't know if I can do that.
Yeah, no. At this point, no.
We could. You're right. Okay, let's talk about A New Hope.
Yes. Enough geeking out about John Williams for.
Yeah, in case you didn't know, John Williams is the conductor of the Star Wars soundtracks, the composer.
Yeah.
Yes. So everybody's like, yeah.
On the off chance, we had no idea.
In case you thought the music was brought to you, you know, by like One Direction, you would be mistaken. Worst boy band ever. Learn to dance, boys. Okay, moving on. So, A New Hope.
Yes.
I have a few honorable mentions. I know you only have one. We talked about this briefly. This is an honorable mention because I feel it's my duty as a Star Wars fan, especially an OT fan, to put this in there. Again, it's not literally one of my favorite moments, but it needs to be mentioned, and that's the duel between Obi-Wan and Darth Vader. I'm sure a lot of people right now are like, how is that not like number two or number three or number one? But I don't know. It's just, it's not an exciting duel. I think the story element is very compelling in light of the prequels.
Yes.
However, there's, except for the very end of the duel, there's nothing emotional about it. In my opinion, you know, it's very apparent that Obi-Wan has no affection for Darth Vader because to him, Anakin is definitely dead.
Yeah.
So Obi-Wan is in no way going to try to save him or have any kind words for him. It's just like, I'm just going to fight him. The duel is very slow because they're, you know, it's an old man and a bionic man. So, you know, it's not the most exciting duel ever. I think it's worth, again, it's worth a mention because it's the first time we see lightsabers and that is cool.
Yes.
And, you know, I do like the element of how, like, Obi-Wan is kind of like, forcing the troops away from the door. Like, even though Obi-Wan is in the midst of this duel, he's doing something to propel Luke forward. I think that's really cool, like the story element to it. But it's not, to me, this is me personally, visually it's just nothing that spectacular. And this is obviously somebody who grew up, you know, long after 1977. I'm sure when people first saw that, they're like, wow, that is so cool. But in light of what we have now, it's not all that exciting to me.
Right, right. And the interesting thing about that, just to sort of go off, you know, follow that tangent for a second, is even as a kid, when I first saw Star Wars for the very first time with the special edition and all that fun stuff at 7, that duel honestly didn't, like, stick with me as much as, like, some of the blaster fights and the space battles, especially. The space battles was what really stuck with me from A New Hope. Sort of maybe hinting at some of my higher items on this list here. But the lightsaber duel, it was cool, yeah, but I didn't really start caring about the lightsaber duels until episodes 5 or 6. Mm-hmm. And then it didn't really, like, take over until I saw Phantom Menace. Mm-hmm. With that duel of the fates. But I don't know, for some reason, this duel, even as a kid, I was always playing, you know, blasters, as Han or Luke, rather than, or R2-D2, even as a kid, rather than lightsaber duels. So
I hear you. Even after 5 and 6, I still was more enamored with the blaster fights than I was the lightsaber fights. Again, now it's definitely not the case. I mean, I love the duel in episode 5 and episode 6, but episode 4, like when we did our favorite duels episode, I mean, I don't think it was on either of our lists.
No,
you know, it's just not that exciting to me. But again, I'm giving it a mention because it deserves a mention.
Yeah.
From the story element, and it's the first duel in Star Wars, which is pretty cool. Yeah.
Story wise, this definitely holds a lot more weight since the prequels came out. So
I mean, it's apparent that there's no relationship left between those two.
It is very interesting to notice that, but also kind of sad.
Yeah.
Because Obi-Wan has already buried Anakin, and he's moved on, and he's not even thinking about Anakin anymore. So,
You know, I saw that Star Wars recut or whatever where they put in, like, the Battle of the Heroes song for it, because I felt like if they redid it with new music, it might be a little bit more compelling. But the Battle of the Heroes song does not fit with that either, because it's way too fast and intense. It doesn't match that duel speed.
What you would need is something more along the lines of that choir moment
from episode 6.
Episode 6.
Exactly. I feel like something like that would be really cool there. But you can't use, like, a prequel duel song because those are fast paced to mirror the fighting going on.
Right.
So anyway.
All right.
So that's my first honorable mention. My next one is really short. I'm going to do that, and then you can do yours.
Sure. Go ahead.
Sorry, I have 3.
Yeah, that's fine. I was going to ask how many you had.
Yeah.
So, go ahead.
It's like top 5, and I was like, I got 8 things.
I had 7, but I managed to squeeze 2 into 1. I cheated earlier.
Good. Oh, good. Where is it? Oh, yeah. So, and this is a very short thing, but the scene when Darth Vader chokes out Captain Antilles, again, makes me sound like a horrible human being. But I think the reason I like it so much, as odd as that sounds, is it just, this is the, I mean, yeah, when we see Darth Vader walk through that, you know, the entranceway into Tana 4, we know this is the bad guy. He's all in black. There's that dum, 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 you know, like, it's clear this is a bad guy. But then the very next time we see him, he's got a dude one-handed by the throat off the ground. Like, just totally, like, this is the bad guy. You don't mess with this guy. He is evil. You know, I think we've had tangents on this before, and at some point we should actually talk about this more in depth, but Darth Vader in episode 4 is a very black and white character. He is the bad guy. He's evil. There's nothing human about him. For all we know, he's a robot. You know, like, he just doesn't care. And I think this scene with Captain Antilles shows that, like, you know, Captain Antilles is trying to make it clear, like, we're a legitimate ship. Like, we're, you know, if this is a consular ship, where's the ambassador? And then I love when he throws him, though, and he puts his hands out to stop himself from hitting the wall. It's like, dude, that dead man is great. But, I really enjoy that scene because, again, it just shows, like, how scary this empire is. Like, they're just going to come in, this guy will choke you right out. Like, it's terrifying. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't really have anything to really say as far as that, you know, other than, yeah, it was, excuse me, soda burp. That went up into my nose. That was weird. Sorry, that's on the show.
There you go, everyone.
That's on the show for you, folks. But yeah, other than the fact that it was just to reinforce this is the bad dude, this is a bad guy, you don't mess with him sort of thing from the beginning, that's kind of it for me.
Yeah. There's not much to it, so.
Yeah. My honorable mention, and this is going to be, we kind of talked about this a little bit before the show started, is that this is the only one that I've got where they're actually on the Death Star. Mm. And this is the scenes and the moments with the Wookiee prisoner, where they, you know, Luke has his bright idea of what they're going to do, and, you know, Chewie doesn't like it at first, and then they're in the elevator going up, and, you know, this is not going to work. Why didn't you say so before? I did say so before, you know. And then him, you know, Chewie roaring at the mouse droid and that sort of thing. Those little humor moments with the, you know, the Wookiee prisoner made an honorable mention on my list. I really always found those amusing and interesting. So, I don't know. That's not much to say about it other than I found it amusing and funny. But that made my honorable mentions.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the only stuff from On the Death Star that made my list. So,
yeah, like you said, we were talking about this beforehand. The stuff on the Death Star just doesn't – it's not terribly exciting to me anymore. Again, when I was like a little kid, I loved like the shootout in the cell bay, mm-hmm. Like chasing around the stormtroopers. One thing I've never cared for, and I'm not saying I don't like it, but I just never had any affinity for, is the trash compactor scene. Cause like I never, even though the John Williams writes a perfect piece of music for that scene, like the strings just really intensifying the drama, but it's just like, you know, they're going to get out. Like even as a little kid, I was like, they're not in like, oh no, they're in danger. They're going to get out. Like you just, there's no way all of our heroes are going to be crushed right now. Like,
right.
No. Like I just didn't feel the type of drama it was predicated upon. I didn't feel it. So that's why I feel like that scene just doesn't do anything for me. And the Dianoga doesn't make any sense. Why the hell is there a creature in a trash compactor on a ship in the middle of space? Like, it just doesn't make sense. I'm sure somebody's out there like, well, because, you know, their natural habitat is, you know, in tractors and... Wait, tractors? What?
Trash compactors.
Trash compactors. But yeah, you know, so... Yeah. But anyway. Whatever. Yeah. My last honorable mention, and I really did want this to be in my list because I actually really like this scene... but it's the scene where Luke is cleaning the droids in the homestead. So a lot of people I've noticed that like I tend to like what people would not consider exciting scenes, but whatever, it's what I like. but I like it because it's a great like Luke just playing with his, you know, T-16 little model there, like flying around almost like a kid. I mean, he's right. Supposed to be like 18, 19 years old. I mean, but he's like flying this thing around, like whoosh, 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 you know. Just isn't fair,
right?
Oh, Biggs is right. I'm never gonna get out of here. Like he's just like he's so whiny, but he's not whiny like Anakin was. Anakin had a different whine to him. I don't know, but like Luke's isn't as obnoxious to me. But because I feel more of a connection to it. He's just somebody who's stuck in this small place. Who dreams of something bigger. And, like, I find it really funny because, again, I almost feel like in A New Hope, to at least in the beginning part, R2 and 3PO are almost like these pet characters for Luke. Because I think of myself, like, when I, you know, growing up with dogs and stuff, if I had, like, something I really wanted to complain about, I would, like, you know, sit down with, like, either Coco or Snickers on my lap, and I'd be like, this is ridiculous, Coco. Snickers, this is stupid. Like, I can't believe Mom won't let me do this. Like, right? Like, your pets are somebody you can totally complain to and cry to without any sort of judgment.
Right.
And I think Luke, who has, like it's apparent that, like, his friends are not around anymore, and now he's just going to complain to these two droids. Like... and out of that, you're like, yeah, I get this. This kid is just like, he wants more. And then he gets it, which is what's really cool is he's cleaning R2. And then he gets this, you know, flash of a message. Like, this is our initial call to adventure. And like, Luke is immediately entranced by that. Who is that? She's beautiful. I can't wait to make out with my sister. oh, sorry. That's a deleted scene. That's going to be on the next Blu-ray.
hopefully not.
yeah, I love that scene because, again, it's so telling of his character at that point. And I think it's really interesting that, like,
little plot twist here, though, but like C-3PO says he's not a good storyteller. What are you talking about? In episode 6, you're a fantastic storyteller in that Ewok treehouse. But yeah, I really enjoy that scene. I don't know if it's on your list or not, but.
No, it's not. But yeah, it's a nice little scene. It's all, that call to adventure is always got to be there. And it's always a unique little moment. And that, you know, Star Wars is no different. So.
Right. Do you want to kick off the top five?
Yeah, I'll kick off the top five. My top five is going to be the cantina scene. Primarily the first part, from when they walk in to when Obi-Wan and Luke leave.
Okay.
That part. Yeah. Because as a kid, and this is a nostalgia pick primarily, although it stuck with me. But as a kid, the only movies I'd seen up to this point in the theaters, and I'd, you know, seen other Disney movies at home, but in the theaters, the only movies I'd seen was Lion King and Toy Story. And so coming into this and seeing all these crazy aliens just blew my mind. Not like, you know, the rest of the movie hadn't already done that up to that point, but blew my mind as to where things could go and what things could look like and how things could interact and where you could find these sort of things. And it was just so exciting and so interesting and so unique to up to that point that I'd never seen anything like that before. And so just the catchy music, the crazy aliens, and then meeting Han and Chewie was just – that all combined to make a very memorable, imprinted scene on 7-year-old Jason. So
it's my favorite version of Jason. Well, sounds weird.
He's kind of still here.
He's still there, yeah. Oh, I know.
he comes out, you know, a lot during these podcasts. But yeah, no, that's number five on my list. So
yeah.
Well, the Han Greedo scene is, you know, whatever at this point. At this point, I'm sort of just like over that scene because of all the Han shot first stuff that goes on. Mm. I'm just like, whatever, just let it be.
You're like, my favorite line in A New Hope is, "We don't want them here. Your droids. They'll have to wait outside." But yeah, no, that's a good one. I'm going to save comment because it's obviously on my list. My number five is, and again, I want to specify really quickly that 5 through 2, like numbers 5, 4, 3, 2,
mm-hmm.
are honestly almost interchangeable. Like as of right now, this is the order I have them in. I think I could change some of these around. My number one is definitely my number one. That's the only one I'm completely set with. But my number five is the opening shot, the opening scene of A New Hope. And I know a lot of people are like, I can't believe that's number five, but it is.
I really forgot to put that on my list.
Oh, Jesus. Got
that one.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So I'll slip that in with one of my other things. Okay. I can do that.
You're like, remember when we first meet Jar Jar and then the Tana 4 goes over? Just kidding. Misa called Jar Jar Binks. Joe Hogan loves Jar Jar Binks. But
there's our Hogan mention for the episode.
Love Joe Hogan. But yeah, I mean, there's just so much to be said about this shot. I mean that shot sold Star Wars in 1977. From things I wasn't there, but from what I've heard from other people, from what I've heard on documentaries, I mean, just nothing had been done like that before. You have this very epic opening crawl, and then you just zoom down, and there's this awesome ship flying by, blazing away at this other ship. And I just think it's just an exact it's an exact imagery of what's going on in this galaxy right now. You have this small rebel force on the run, totally outgunned by this massive empire. In that opening shot pretty much opens our story for us. Here's what's going on in this galaxy far, far away. You've got this small rebel force who are fighting for what is good, but they're completely overwhelmed and they're constantly on the run. And I think it just sets up the image of what's going on between the rebellion and the Empire. And also, I was thinking of this as I was just jotting down a couple notes the other evening. The Empire is actually the legitimate government, if you think about it.
At this point.
This is just a contemporary push, obviously, but the Empire is the legitimate government. But yet we are already sold on who the good guys are, even though – and again, like this is – they're technically terrorists. Like,
right.
You know, in the eyes of the legitimate government, they are terrorists. But I just think it's an interesting social, like almost social commentary on the fact that even though those, you know, the good guys are really just a group of young terrorists, we immediately side with them because we know what is inherently good. And they're fighting what is it for inherently good.
Right.
So, like, this opening shot is just so compelling. And then even just into that initial – just the initial, like gunfight in the hallway there. It's so cool. You see these troopers just running down, you know, at the ready. And they just – I mean, in a sense, they're in a way better position. They're behind defensive walls, and they still just get overwhelmed by the stormtroopers. Hence my remark that just because the stormtroopers on the Death Star can't shoot straight doesn't mean all stormtroopers are crap. Because those stormtroopers – emptied that hole pretty darn quickly and pretty darn accurately. I was saying to Jason before we started recording, I swear that the stormtroopers stationed on the Death Star were just all the newbies, because it's like, why would you need a lot of stormtroopers on the Death Star? So that's why I'm saying that they can't shoot on the Death Star. Other than that, they're not that bad. Hopefully we'll have that backed up with Rebels. So that opening shot is just, it's incredible.
Yeah, so. It's great. I can't believe I completely forgot to put that on my list. But like I said, I'm going to squeeze it in with one of my other ones, so I won't talk about it now.
Okay.
Something that I'm going to – my number four is something that you're probably going to not comment on yet. But that will be Luke and the Twin Suns, The Sunsets.
I totally forgot that one. Are you
– Really? Really?
No.
Okay. I was like, I didn't think so. Anyways, it's the twin sunsets, obviously. This is a great scene. This is, we all love this scene, and there's, you know, a gazillion reasons why. But this is one that's definitely, as I've gotten older, has stuck with me and kept rising up on my list of favorite moments and favorite images from this film. And it's just that yearning, that desire for adventure, for purpose, for a future that seems so out of reach. And not only that, but the cinematography of it is fantastic with the music and everything. And it's just, it is the complete package as far as that's concerned. So it's fantastic. I love it. So, it's number four. There's not a lot to say that hasn't already been said more eloquently by other people. So,
It's
number four.
It's definitely, I really, really enjoy that scene, and that's why I'm going to reserve my comments till later. Because obviously it's on my list.
Yes.
But, my number four is the scene with Luke and Obi-Wan in his little hovel, his home on Tatooine. I really enjoy this scene because, again, it's a lot of story setup. This is one of my favorite shots. I know this was added in the special editions. I honestly can't remember if there was any changes between the special edition and the Blu-ray. But I just like the shot of outside of his house with Luke's landspeeder just parked to the side. I mean, it's just such a tiny little thing. I like the smoke coming up from the chimney. Like, it just, you know, it just really does remind you of, like, what a solitary life, you know, Obi-Wan or Ben is now Eden is. Ben Kenobi has been living a pretty kind of lonely life for 19 years. And that's a long time with very little interaction. What's interesting is it's clear that – and maybe we'll get some of this even in Rebels, who knows. But it's clear that Obi-Wan and Luke have obviously had some minor interaction before this point. I mean, he knows who Ben is. He knows he's kind of this crazy wizard. But obviously Ben has never invited him, right, to becoming a Jedi yet. But at this point, like, with these droids there, Luke's asking the right questions. Luke wants to get out of there. I bet you Ben can sense that. He can sense Luke's, you know, anxiety to move on and do something more with himself. And I love it because, you know, he tells Luke the truth, at least a version of the truth, of who his father actually was. He lets him know, no, your father wasn't just some, you know, navigator on a space freighter. He was a general in the Jedi army in the Clone Wars. Like, he goes from being like just this average blue collar dad to warrior hero dad. Like, and now Luke's even more enamored by that, because, you know, if you think back to the scene when he's talking with you know, Brew and Owen, like, he knew my father? Like, he's so excited, even though, as far as he knows, his father is just this blue-collar worker. But, you know, mm-hmm. he desires to know more about his father. And now he's being told that he was actually this Jedi warrior. Like, what? Mm-hmm. He's just so enamored. And again, considering when this was shot, and I am not of the opinion that George Lucas had a clear-cut vision of what his films were going to look like in 1977. He clearly did not.
Right.
I know he – I mean, yeah, sure, maybe an overall general picture. But the particulars took obviously a lot of time because he still can't settle on them. But, you know what they say about great minds? They're crazy. And George Lucas is definitely a little crazy.
Yeah, yes.
But you know, like
genius is never sane.
Exactly. But when Obi-Wan is talking about how, you know, my pupil Darth Vader like betrayed and murdered your father, when they like zoom in on Obi-Wan's face, you can see this hint of sadness. And I think it's not – I think it's still this feeling of guilt that Obi-Wan holds on to. He still feels partially guilty for the fall of his closest friend. I think that – maybe I'm reading too much into it. But I really do see that. Like, there's almost like a sadness in his eyes when he's talking about this. Mm-hmm. And like, he's hesitant on how to phrase it as well.
Yeah. But he takes that little pause right before he starts launching into the explanation. And it's, I don't know if that was by design or if Alec Guinness just decided to do that. But it works so well in light of everything that we've seen in the prequels and the rest of the story combined. So it's great that that either by happy accident or by design that was in there,
right?
So
yeah, and then obviously again to further confirm Luke's call to adventure, he hears the whole message. Mm-hmm. You know, he hears Obi-Wan addressed as General Kenobi. You know, and Obi-Wan just looks at him with like the smile, like, "You must learn the ways of the Force if you're to come with me to Alderaan."
You must learn the ways of the Force if you want to come with me to Alderaan.
Alderaan? I can't go to Alderaan. Oh, wait. Does he say anything else after that?
I don't remember.
I don't either.
I really need to like sit down and watch the entire movie in one sitting again.
Yeah, but anyway.
I've been watching bits and pieces of this one over the past couple of weeks because of my – I'm giving a symposium presentation in a couple of weeks that's titled Star Wars as Modern Melodrama, and I'm focusing on this film in particular, so I keep like going back and watching clips because that I'm going to use in the presentation, so it's great.
That is great.
But so it's a scholastic excuse to watch Star Wars.
I hope you slip in a Jar Jar scene, just be like, ooh, sorry, that's not supposed to be in there. Just like a quick one, like, Misa called Jar Jar Binks. Be like, oh, sorry, sorry, that wasn't supposed to be there. My friend Joe Hogan put it in there. He's a knucklehead. But yeah, and again, the scene is just, it's really cool. Cause again, Luke gets that call to adventure. He gets that invitation into something bigger that he clearly wants. And Obi-Wan knows that the time is right to make that offer. You know, obviously all the other times before he knew it wasn't the right time. But he knows that things are getting really tight with this rebellion. And he knows that Luke is ready, and he makes the invitation. Mm-hmm. But Luke, you know, again, he's got, you know, he's just got that familial duty kind of still stuck in him. He can't let go, and just says, you know, I can't. And Obi-Wan, you know, the great line, you know, you must do what you feel is right, of course. You know,
you must do what you feel is right, of course.
And then the scene ends, and it's I love that scene because it's Luke. Of course, Luke wants to go with Ben. More than anything, but he's not ready to let go yet. But that's about to happen for him anyway. But, you know, it's a great scene. And also it's the scene where we first learn about the Force. That's kind of important. You know, he explains what the Force is to Luke. So Luke is being invited to an adventure. He's invited to go hopefully, you know, save the damsel in distress and potentially learn about this thing called the Force. You know, like he's like – his whole mind is probably literally blown right here. And to a certain degree, it's probably almost – it's like, whoa, this – not only can this not sink in deep enough past my like familial duties, like I'll take you to Anchorhead. How about that?
Overload. Just overload.
Okay. Exactly.
Okay, just – it was probably too much at once for him. And so he's like, home, yes.
Yeah.
Cozy.
Exactly.
Safe.
Exactly.
Safe. It's – but yeah.
You know, that would be like your first day starting your new job. Beautiful woman asks you on a date. You're offered a huge raise. And then somebody tells you that, you know, I don't know, something else great. You know, like you could just be like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, none of this is bad. It's just, I'm not ready. Like, I'm gonna retreat to what's comfortable. Like, and I think that's, and I like that, you know, again, obviously you're using Joseph Campbell here, but what Lucas is trying to tell in this first part of the story is like any human person, whenever we're kind of invited into something bigger, the initial response is like, whoa, I can't do that. I have to go home. Like there is that, there's that fear and that, you know, that anxiety towards it. But, so this, that's why I like that scene. It's my number four. I said,
that's a good one.
So
that's a good one.
Thank you. I like it.
But yeah. I'm going to continue on to number three.
Do it.
A lot of my memorable moments, my favorite moments from this aren't real deep. There's not a lot to say in particular about any of these other than, yeah, I like that. It was fun. It was great. And this one is no exception. So number three is going to be the medal ceremony, just the medal ceremony, the pomp and circumstance, the celebration, the everything ended happily ever after at this movie for, you know, 2 seconds before the Empire showed back up. But it was just after getting in, you know, as a kid watching this for the very first time, getting introduced to this immense galaxy, having my brain just explode from all the new stuff I was seeing and hearing and taking in. It was real great. And to just, at the end of it all, have a celebration, have a solid, happy ending that this was, you know, at least for today, everything is okay and everything is all right. And they have a moment to celebrate and just relax and be happy. And I think, you know, primarily for the reason why it stuck with me for so long is the music, because I can't get enough of that music. The music is fantastic. But it's just, I always, as soon as we come to that part in the movie when I'm watching it, I can't help but smile and, you know, just get a little excited at the whole thing, the whole idea of this ceremony, this celebration. I don't know. I love that last moment that we get from A New Hope. It's such a perfect moment for the story at this point. So
yeah, well, that's my number three as well. I loved the throne room scene. You know, for a lot of the same, you know, and I don't have much more to say than what you just said, but it's exactly that. I mean, it's just, it's a happy ending to the story. Mm-hmm. Like, everything is great. You've got this band of heroes being recognized by the greater band of heroes. I mean, because to us, the rebels are the heroes, but then you've got these specific heroes being recognized by everybody. I always love, obviously, and that music, the music makes that scene.
Yeah.
I mean, that's to me one of my favorite pieces of music in all of Star Wars. I mean, it's just, it's so triumphant. It's a triumphant march. It's perfect for that scene. You know, I think partially the reason we get this scene as well at the end of A New Hope is because I don't think George Lucas knew if he was going to make any more. Let's be honest,
right.
You know, and
right.
I mean, he's very clear about that as well. You know, I think he made A New Hope, and if it failed, that it would be fine as a standalone movie. Like, yeah, Darth Vader's not dead, but in our eyes, the immediate bad guys have been vanquished. So the movie kind of comes to this happy ending. And again, like the theme of Star Wars in general anyway is that good prevails. And we see that in this triumphant scene. And again, I think I've mentioned this in an episode in the past, but you know, this scene happens in the Misasi Temple. It's you know, it's a temple. A temple is, in a sense, like a sacred space. Not saying that it was a religious space, but it's a sacred space. And within the confines of this sacred space, we are recognizing our heroes. They are being elevated as examples to the rest of the crowd of this is what selfless action does. You know, and I really like it, too, that when they turn around to face the crowd with their medals on and everybody starts applauding. Like, I'm always so happy when I see that. And what I love is, and again, don't know if it's, you know, if it was a director's note or not, but
that the like this just like this quirky smile that comes across Han Solo's face. It's almost like, you know, he's this tough scoundrel, but he's loving this moment. He's loving this recognition. Probably partially for his ego, but I think he really feels like I think it's probably one of the first times in his life he's substantially done something good for another person. He did not have to go back. But he does for Luke. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I love that smile on his face as the scene ends, because it's just like, yes, he did the good thing. He did the right thing.
So, yeah.
That's my number three as well.
Awesome.
So already up to
number two. So, all right. Well, number two, this is the one where I sort of cheated and squeezed two into one. This is not where I'm slipping the other part that I forgot about completely. That will be saved for number one, obviously, because it's the only one I have left. But this is where I sort of cheated. For number two, I've got the TIE fighter chase and the Death Star attack. That is like a huge chunk of the movie.
Yeah.
And it's two separate scenes. But the reasons why I like it is exactly the same. It's high excitement. It's the starfighter battles. The music is fantastic. And it's just exciting and fun to watch. And this was, you know, this is a little nostalgic. But it stuck with me as one of my favorite parts of the movies. The movie in general, just all these years. But as a kid, this was what captured my attention. The rest of the movie was exciting. The rest of the movie was interesting up to this point. But this is where things really started to get awesome for me. And I loved the idea of this space combat and the space dogfights. You know, first with the TIE fighters chasing the Millennium Falcon, it was cool that the Falcon, you know, big and clunky looking as it was, could fight back and survive. But then those X-Wings and the Y-Wings, you know, coming in and attacking the Death Stars, like 30 ships taking on a huge Death Star and dozens of TIE fighters, and they won. They managed to win at the end of the day, which was great. But, you know, just the excitement, the dogfight, the frenetic, fast-paced action, it was something I'd never experienced before up at that point. And so I think that's why it initially what lodged so deep in my brain is the best part of the movie initially. But it's stuck with me. Every time I watch A New Hope again, I go back to being a kid and going, oh, this is just so cool. Not a lot to say on it, but those scenes sort of just kind of always went together in my mind because of why I liked them. And so I figured, mesh them together here.
Well, I think it's difficult to say a lot about an action scene. You like an action scene because it's exciting. It's about all all you can really say. There's not a whole lot of expounding you can do upon that.
Right.
But yeah, actually, you know, this was something that I just literally, just because I was like, I can't do another honorable mention, but it was my fourth honorable mention was the dogfight with the TIE fighters. Mm-hmm. Again, I love it because I'm a huge Han Solo fan. I'm a Millennium Falcon fan. And it is great. I like the way you put it, you know, this clunky big ship against these small fighters. But it's really cool. Like it's a lot of fun to watch that shootout, to watch that space battle. Mm-hmm. And again, like the end space battle over the Death Star is awesome. But I don't know. It's just not on my list. I mean, I certainly enjoy it. But it is. It's very exciting. A good dogfight is awesome. And, you know, the roar of the TIE fighters, the really cool phonetics of the X-Wing. I mean, it's a great scene. And it is, you know, the peril of – the only thing that always kind of troubled me, though, is like, why are guys just dying? Like, why don't you, like, break out and try to get behind the TIE fighters? Like, this is just really bad flying tactics to me. But, like, thank God Wedge got out of there because I love Wedge. It's just a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to see that scene.
Okay. Tangent thought here that hit me all of a sudden. Why in the world – did George write a character in that would survive the assault of the first Death Star and show back up in each subsequent film. Why would he do that? When we've already got our band of heroes, you know.
Good point.
It's, I mean, who besides George Lucas could think of that? You know, and he's become a cult character, this cult, you know, fan base that he's got almost. It's, I'm one of them, you know.
Yeah.
Admittedly, I love him. He's one of my, you know, favorite classic characters, but
I wonder if
it's, you know, I wonder how that came about.
Yeah.
Because, you know, everyone else is dying left and right. He's the only one besides Luke and Han that we see that survives the Death Star.
Yeah.
Everybody else dies, including Biggs. Why have Wedge survive and not have Biggs survive?
Here's my thought, because obviously I don't know. Uh-huh. I almost wonder, though, if it's, you know, everybody else that died in that tactic, right? Like all the other ships from the first three waves. I mean, they get gunned down immediately. Wedge gets hit, and he's critically, like, his ship is critically, not wounded. Ships aren't wounded. Damaged.
Damaged.
There we go. You know, his ship is critically damaged, and maybe it's his way of trying to write in the, you know, the compassion of Luke. You know, there's not much more I can do back here. You're right. Get out of here. Like, the only thing left for you to do is literally die. And I think, you know, even he notices his ship is damaged. He acknowledges that to Luke, whereas it seems like the other pilots didn't even get that second to say that, right? That maybe it's his way of saying something about Luke's character. Luke saying, you know, you can't do any more good back there because the only thing else you can do is die. And Luke's basically saying, it's not worth it. Get out of there. If I get killed, I get killed, but there's no reason for you to die as well.
Right. And the other side of that might be – sorry.
Let me just – and the reason I think Biggs dies is because, again, just to show how much Luke loses. So.
Right. That's true. But the other side of that is it also shows the determination of Vader, because Wedge flies out.
Yeah.
And Vader, yeah, let him go. Stay on the leader. He's so focused because, you know, he's not going to draw anybody away now. You know, nobody's going to go chasing after Wedge and give Luke some breathing room now. So, but yeah, it's just interesting because he shows back up and manages to survive Hoth. And then the assault on the second Death Star. I mean, I think by that time, you know, you're going to have him survive just because he's become reasonably popular. But he's barely in Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
Barely, but I don't know. It's just interesting because I can't think really of any other series that throws a little character in there just –
yeah,
you know, once or twice in a movie, just and he keeps showing up and he keeps surviving these major battles. That was just an interesting thought that hit me while we were talking.
That is interesting. Neither of us could have a correct answer because we don't know. But yeah, that's a good point.
Anybody knows any background story on that, you know, behind the scenes background story on that, I would be really interested to know. So, but
yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
I'm not sure if George Lucas has ever talked about that. That would be a question I would have for him if I ever met him, now that I've pondered it so much just now.
Yeah.
But anyways, that's have a good you done point. Your number two?
No.
Well, go right ahead.
So my number two is the cantina scene from walking in to actually the end of Han Solo's confrontation with Jabba the Hutt. Again, a lot of the same things you said. I just, you know, walked – it just almost for nostalgic purposes, when they walk into the cantina, and it's just so cool. There's just all these different creatures from all over the galaxy, all these different beings and such. And it's a very seedy place. Like, I don't know. I like the colors in the cantina. It's so dark and grimy. And again, it's so opposite prequels. Again, like we are not in the fancy district of Coruscant anymore. You know, this is a very seedy place, and, you know, the confrontation with Ponda Baba and Dr. Avizan's, you know, I mean, immediately he gets into a bar fight because he's not in the right place. Like, Luke is so out of place here. Of course these bullies are going to pick on him. It makes so much sense that they don't, you know, they just, like, they see Luke, they target Luke. And then, you know, we see Obi-Wan step up to the plate and absolutely just disarm them, literally.
And, you know, he's so in control of the situation. It's very clear that Luke doesn't have too much to fear with him, because we just saw him outsmart these, you know, use the force on these stormtroopers, and now he's also, showing his bar fighting skills by disarming these people with the death sentence on 12 systems. And then obviously, like you were saying, Jason, we get the conversation with Han Solo, which is a lot of fun. Just meeting, even though like Han Solo is a complete cocky jerk when we first meet him, I always loved him right off the bat. And I think it's because of the reason I love the cantina scene is because of all the Han Solo stuff more than anything, because he's my favorite character. So we meet this guy who's just, and I think I've been thinking about it more in the last few months. What I really like about Han Solo is, as a kid, I connected to him because he was everything I wasn't. I was not a very confident kid. I was really shy. Not shy, but like not super confident. Didn't know if I could like trust my own skills. Here's this guy who's just like, I have a fast ship. I'm not afraid of the Imperials. Like I'm as tough as they come. Like it was just like this. He just exuded confidence, which obviously comes off as cockiness, but he's also very confident. And I really appreciated that in Han. You know, and then we see him take care of Greedo. You know, you said, you know, obviously like the Han shot first stuff becomes annoying, but I still enjoy that scene. To me, it's always Han shot first, just because, again, it's so important to his character. Like a lot of people that don't like it have made the point, you know, Han Solo has no other choice to get out of this situation. You don't need to make Greedo shoot. But that's the type of person Han Solo is at this point of the story. He will kill you if you're a threat to him. Doesn't care if it's in cold blood or not. And then as he's leaving, he flips that coin to Wurr and just says, sorry about the mess. I mean, to him, I didn't particularly like that part of his character as a kid, but, you know, it's just like, he doesn't care. Like, he's not going to be bullied. And again, as a young kid who was occasionally bullied, it was great to see him just like stand up to the bullies. And we see that, you know, then continuing into the scene with Jabba, you know, for all the changes in the, you know, the special editions, the changes in the DVDs and the Blu-rays, the only one that I absolutely love is this keeping the scene with Jabba. The only critique I have of it is, why does Jabba look so markedly different than he does in Return of the Jedi? That, be that as it may, it's not a big deal. It's not a necessary scene because it's basically repeated dialogue from the scene with Greedo. But I like it so much just because we see Han Solo standing up to a crime boss. I mean, you know, this would be like going up to Tony Soprano or The Godfather and just saying, you know, this is how I'm going to do things, and this is how you're going to respond. Like, Han Solo is not intimidated by anyone. Now, granted, maybe he is on the inside peeing his pants, but I think, you know, he stands up for himself, and that's just really cool, and I really enjoyed that scene with Jabba. So this is why it's my number two. It's really just more about the introduction of Han Solo. I mean, the cantina is great. I love Figger and Dan and the model nodes, and, you know, the scene is a lot of fun inside of the cantina, but I really like it gives us this kind of, you know, like just kind of really confident character who's just going to see our heroes through on their adventure. You know, it's pretty apparent that Han Solo is going to become a big character for us, but initially right here, he's nothing more than he's just going to be the bridge for Luke and Ben's further adventure and whatever to get his money. But he's so confident that I really enjoyed the character that we meet in the cantina.
Got my thoughts out on the cantina. So I will hit my final point, my favorite moment from A New Hope. And I'm sort of sliding that opening shot into my number one here. Because my number one is the R2 and 3PO escape from the blockade runner. Their shots and scenes.
This is your number one.
Yes.
Love it.
It is my number one moment from A New Hope. And this has come about more recently. This is probably the one that is the least nostalgic at this point. Although maybe a little bit, because I've always liked R2 and 3PO. But
sure.
It's just their banter, the little scenes, you know, all of this intense action and drama that's happening around them is sort of like, it's happening to them from our perspective. And so of all the characters that we get thrown into this part of the adventure with this, you know, we get the droids, you know, R2 and 3PO, which of course now us as Star Wars fans, we're used to that. But it's just the mechanic and the translator. I mean, who cares about them in a normal film, you know?
Right.
But, you know, that's who we got. And they're bickering, they're constant bickering between the two of them. And then the shot where they're running across the hall amidst all the laser blasts. And the scene in the escape pod tunnel there, you know, right before, you know, you can't go in there, it's restricted. You know, that whole scene right there, it solidifies my love of the two characters, and it's possibly one of the best R2-3PO interchanges that we ever get in the entire saga. So, since that all happens at the beginning of the movie, that's where I'm going to slip in that opening shot as part of that. But that's my favorite moment from A New Hope, and it's all done and over with real quickly in the movie. It's kind of disappointing, which is maybe why I attach so much enjoyment to the end of the film with the battles and the medal ceremony at the end, because I need to look forward to something for the rest of the film. But after my favorite is already done. But yeah, no, that's my favorite part of A New Hope is the droids at the very beginning. Their escape from the Rebel Blockade Runner, and the providing the reason for Luke to ever go on his adventure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
you know, and it's a good thing the Empire was conserving laser blast that day.
Yes.
Yeah. There goes another one, sir. Hold your fire. We don't have enough money to.
That was the new trainee. He was the new trainee on the gunner station. They were training him in, and then, oh, there's the Rebel Blockade Runner. We got to go after Leia's ship now. And so instead of just having the trainees, you know, shoot willy-nilly after everything, just, just scan first. This is what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to scan them, determine if they're a threat, and then fire. You know,
yeah.
So
yeah,
that's the explanation there. He was a trainee, and they were training him.
Okay, yeah. I got it. But yeah, I
just solved the problem.
I like the part right before they get into the escape pod a lot as well. Like, it's so funny. Don't call me a mindless philosopher, you overweight gobble grease. And I just like,
yeah.
I like when he says, you know, what mission? What are you talking about? Like, just the confusion in his voice is
what mission? Perfect. What are you talking about? I'm not getting in there. I'm going to regret this.
Yeah, I assume that would be on your list. I just didn't. Then again, you're Jason Hunt. Of course, it's your number one.
Of course,
love it. I love it.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, it's a fun scene, and it is. It does solidify the interaction of these characters in the midst of this kind of chaotic battle. We do have this somewhat comic relief. You know, I think they provide what Jar Jar was meant to provide for Episode One. They just do it much better. So yeah, I really enjoy specifically. Yeah.
Jar Jar needed a companion to bicker off of and bounce off of.
Right.
Is what he needed.
Right.
And Qui-Gon kind of was that.
Yeah, but not
really.
But not really, exactly.
Not
like,
really. So
they weren't already bound together. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
Like 3PO and R2 are just so funny in that scene, and just R2's determination, and 3PO's like, what are you doing? You can't get in there. Like,
right.
It's great.
We're not programmed to
yeah.
Think of self-preservation.
Yeah.
But of course, earlier he's like, we'll be sent to the spice exactly. Miser pencils and blasted to who knows what.
Yeah.
So if he's thinking about it, it's a great idea. If R2's thinking about it, it's got to be horrible. So.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Because we know, you know, that little droid's going to get me into trouble. Oh, he excels with that.
Yeah, yeah.
yeah,
exactly.
So, yes, that's my number one. What is your favorite moment? I think I know what it is, because I think you mentioned that it's on your list and we haven't talked about it yet. So,
yeah.
But we'll see if any of the Larians have been paying attention. So,
it's again not going to be a surprise.
No.
But it is the scene when Luke stares off into the sunset. I just
I love it. To me, that is the scene that captures the title of the movie. This is The New Hope. You know, I just think, I know you mentioned it earlier and we've talked about it before, so I'm not going to say too much, but it's just this beautiful scene with the, again, perfect music by John Williams. And this scene is visually painting the frustration Luke is feeling. Mm-hmm. Again, it takes really good acting, it takes really good storytelling and direction and cinematography to express what's going on inside of a person, right? Because, like, and words sometimes just can't capture it. You know, that's why, for me, like, some of my favorite scenes with Anakin in the prequels are scenes where he doesn't say anything, because he's not sometimes the best line deliverer. But he does have a very good body language. And I think Luke's body language is absolutely perfect in this scene. He's staring off into the sunset. And it's funny that it is a twin sunset, right? Like, George Lucas had some sort of twin story idea. Uh-huh. But, you know, again, it's an exact metaphor for what he's feeling inside. You know, there's this longing that he wants something that's more, something beyond himself, and that he's waiting for his sun to rise, right? Like, I mean, the mm-hmm. idea of a sunset and a sun rising is symbols for change. Luke wants a change. That's what he really desires. I mean, and in the context of what's just happened, you know, he's met these droids who potentially know Ben Kenobi, who potentially knows his father, like, mm-hmm. and he potentially hopes that they're enough now that Owen's got enough people on hand at the farm that he can finally go off to the academy and skip off to the rebellion. Like, Luke is just – but he's just been told no again. You know?
Right.
Like, and to some degree, Luke is an adult. He probably could just up and go, but he's not going to do that to his uncle. So, you know, he's leaving – he leaves the dinner table like a typical teenager, like, I don't want to talk about this. And he just goes up and just stares – like, and that scene just paints the picture of this is a young man – who knows that there's more for him out there. He's been expressing it in the last 5 minutes of the movie to the droids and then to his uncle. Like, he wants something more, and he's just waiting for his, you know, his sun to rise. You know, he's watching the sun set, but he, you know, in a sense, he's awaiting the sunrise.
Yeah.
So that's my number one scene.
Woo! It's a great scene, you know. I think it – is that the only one that made it on both of our lists? Opening shot.
No, of both of
the cantina.
The cantina, yeah. And the throne room.
Oh, yeah.
So, but yeah.
What am I saying?
Yeah.
I'm dumb. Sorry.
Oh, boy.
Oh, man.
So there you go. There's our top five moments from episode 4 A New Hope. Or for you old folks, Star Wars.
I guess what? We're all going to become old folks
with
the new fans from episode 7.
That's right.
Yes, it's going to happen. So,
well, I'll just be ready.
Accept it with grace and don't feel too bad.
I'm not too worried about it. So, anyway, Jason, you did a tally this past week. I thought, you know, I was just thinking about this the other, like, while I was at work one day. I was like, that was really fun, like, just asking everybody, you know, on our huge 8-guest episode last time, what everybody's favorite Star Wars movie was, and just, you know, having this really small sample size to express, you know, right now, maybe what some of people's favorite Star Wars movies. So I figured, what the heck? I'm going to ask the Larrians, what are your, you know, guys, just write us, let us know. And do you know how many total responses we got? I mean, it was in the 20s.
We got like 30, I think. It was 30 or so responses from Facebook.
It's incredible.
It was great. Yeah. It was fantastic.
Thank you, Larians.
Yeah.
But Jason did the tallying, which is awesome.
I was able to sit down and tally up all of the different things that you guys mentioned and then include in what we have said on our last show with all of our guests. And the list looks like so. I will be going from least to most. So according to our sample, this is how many each film got for favorite Star Wars movie. Phantom Menace didn't get any.
That's not a surprise.
Sadly, no. It's a great movie, but it's one that I think gets slightly overshadowed. Anyways. Attack of the Clones got 3.
Wow.
We got three people.
Okay.
Jazz being one of them, who voted for Attack of the Clones. Revenge of the Sith got 4. So I was a little surprised at how close Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith were.
Yeah, that is surprising.
A New Hope. This is where we see the huge jump, folks. A huge jump. A New Hope walked away with 11.
Wow.
Yes. So that was interesting. Return of the Jedi was at 13. And Empire Strikes Back won by the slim margin of 14.
Good.
It's
the best one.
And before I was able to ask Carl what his tally of was for our previous episode with all the podcasters on it, Return of the Jedi and A New Hope had tied ahead of Empire Strikes Back. So according to our Larians, before you count in us and the podcasters, according to the Larians, it was like 11 and 11 to 9 for A New Hope and Return of the Jedi over Empire Strikes Back, which I thought was interesting.
That is interesting.
I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah.
But then after adding everybody else in from the podcast, it you know came out to what it was here. But it was really interesting that so many people I was surprised at how close those top three were, I should say. That's a better way to phrase it. I was just surprised at how close it ended up being because everybody says, oh, Empire is the most loved Star Wars film out of all of them, which is probably true on the grand scale that it is the most loved. But the amount that people – the gulf that people sort of place, you know, Empire Strikes Back above everything else was a lot smaller than what I had anticipated. So, which is interesting. It would be interesting to take this poll again in a couple of years and see if anything changed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I think with the new addition of all these, you know, the younger fans from the Clone Wars, Rebels, and then the sequel trilogy that we're going to get, I think things are going to shake up. And I think what has been the mainstay, the sort of norm for so long is going to get shaken up. I don't know quite how it's going to get shook up. But I think it's gonna happen. It's gonna be interesting to see, you know,
yeah,
a couple of years down the road what happens to this.
Absolutely.
So
we'll have to do that when we get to episode 1977. Yeah. When you're 120 and I'm dead.
I'll come
back to you as a Force ghost.
Yes, yes. I will Skype with your Force ghost.
Although
if you're a Force ghost,
I'll come to you. Don't worry.
Same. So yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Anyway. But yeah, that was really cool. We really appreciate all of you guys. Obviously, this is not a scientific poll. I don't know how to create one of those. but an informal poll amongst the Larians here. It was great to see all of y'all's responses.
Yeah.
All y'all's.
All y'all's.
Sorry.
I'm from Texas.
That's my Texas twang coming out. Anyways,
I believe I saw a tumbleweed.
Those are more common in Arizona than in Texas, actually.
Well, that's where you live now. That's what I was doing. I was making the connection.
Oh, exactly. Gosh. You're smart there. But yeah. So thanks again, everybody, for contributing to that and the immense response that we got. It was great.
Yeah,
so,
that was great. Thank you, guys. And girls.
Yes.
Although I don't think any girls did respond. But
there was a couple. There was
okay.
Two or three, maybe.
Okay.
Of course, our podcast had three of them. So.
True. Good point. So anyway, before we go, we do have a nice, fun new matchup given to us by Roger Peroni. Jason, what's that matchup?
Yes, this was a neat little idea that Roger posted on our Facebook page, and so we're going to run with it. And the matchup for our next episode, or whenever we record next, that would be our next episode. What am I saying? Blah. is going to be Jango Fett versus Pre Vizsla. So a couple of Mandalorians going at it. So I think that's going to be fun. Interesting. I do
too. Yes.
And I'm curious, real curious to see what y'all think. So since I've already decided to slip into my Texas twang a bit, I'm just going to keep it here for the rest of the episode, pretty much. Except for the outro, which I will do in my normal announcerish voice. So, but yes, so Jango Fett versus Pre Vizsla. And Carl, if people want to comment on this or let us know what they think, or maybe even submit another idea, how and where can they do that?
On the interwebs. So obviously you guys know Facebook, facebook.com/wampaslairpodcast, twitter.com/wampaslair, and you can always email us at wampaslairpodcast@gmail.com. You can also find us and all the other wonderful podcasts of the 2nd Airborne Division at starwarsreport.com. You got obviously us, the Star Wars Report, Star Wars Beyond the Film, Star Wars Bookworms, and the soon-to-be Rebels Roundtable. Yes. So it's lots of exciting things over at starwarsreport.com. One thing, if you haven't liked us on Facebook, please please like us. Would love a couple new likes maybe this week. That'd be great. If you haven't written us an iTunes review, that would also really help. We haven't gotten a review in a while. That's fine. You know, but we'd love
just
to get
saying,
one.
Just saying, all the reviews, for the most part, except the one, dig at me, gosh, have been great reviews. So thank you to those that have given us reviews.
Right. That one review, whatever. Honestly, screw them.
Saying that Newt Gunray being a better... When I said that Newt Gunray was higher on my list of favorite villains than Thrawn, somebody took issue with that and posted it on iTunes and said that I'm doing something wrong.
Right. You know what's doing something wrong is criticizing somebody's subjective opinion. That's what's wrong. But I won't
we'll
get
just
into
leave
that.
It at that.
Yeah. Yeah. I won't force choke them because I don't know who they are. But
right. Right. The great thing about iTunes is that unless you know who it is, their username is usually completely anonymous.
Yes. It was probably although I bet you it was Kyle Avery. Mm. <just
kidding>. But yeah, be sure to tell your friends, your Star Wars friends about us too. You know, pass the word along. We want to start the conversation, keep the conversation going, folks. So,
Exactly. And again, you know, let us know what you think of this next matchup. I mean, let's see if we can beat out the number of responses that we got this week, which would be awesome.
Yeah.
So I think it's a little bit more of a compelling matchup too. I don't think it should be as much of a landslide, but you never know.
Yeah.
We shall see what the Larians say.
Yes, indeed. Any final thoughts before we wrap this episode up, Carl?
None at all.
All right. Well, in that case, thank you, everybody, once again, for listening to this episode of the Wampa Slayer Podcast. This has been episode number 77, Chillin' in Tashi Station. I am, as always, one of your hosts, Jason, and for Carl, we will see you next time here in the Wampa's Lair.